The anti-life tyranny of Roe v. Wade is over, but the battle for the soul of America is just beginning. So writes Father Frank Pavone, president of Priests for Life. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. And Father Pavone, it's great to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Jerry. Good to be with you again.
So tell me, did you ever think the day would come that Roe v. Wade would actually be overturned?
Well, yes, I did. Of course, none of us knew exactly when or how. But a year ago, we started to have great confidence that that day might be here, because the way that the court framed the question in this Dobbs case left all of us thinking that there's going to be some big change. So indeed, it happened, and it's a sign really of both God's faithfulness and also the resiliency of our American system of government, of our Constitution, that we can correct such a grave error in a peaceful way.
Okay, you mentioned peaceful way, but look at the protests. They're not, quote unquote, mostly peaceful. Of course, the other ones weren't, quote unquote, mostly peaceful either. But what are your comments on the reaction to the Dobbs decision just since Friday? What was it, June 24th?
Well, this just shows the unwillingness of some citizens to participate and go along with the process. People can express outrage and a displeasure with a particular decision. But these folks on the pro-abortion side are reacting this way because, you know, really, they were done a disservice too by Roe v. Wade, because the Supreme Court handed them on a silver platter the so-called right to abortion, and that was a mistake. They didn't have to work for it. They didn't have to persuade or lobby or go through the painstaking process of lawmaking like we do on just about every other issue. Now, we don't have to go through the process of lawmaking to get our freedom of speech or our freedom of religion. The founders gave that to us in the First Amendment. And Roe v. Wade gave it to them in regard to abortion, but that was an error. Now they're correcting that error, and that's why these folks are now saying, well, why are you taking this away from us? You know, it's like spoiled children, but who have to be told, listen, you have to grow up and participate in the process like everybody else. So their behavior is is independent of the process itself. In other words, we're able to transition on really big questions, and there were several of them the Supreme Court answered in these last weeks. And that process works. These folks, though, they're having a temper tantrum, but they have to accept the reality of, they can still work to persuade lawmakers to keep abortion legal, but that's the point. They're going to have to make their case, and they're going to have to do it through persuasion.
Now, we got to make sure as a nation that one of these really violent groups, like, let's say, Antifa or whatever, doesn't assassinate a Supreme Court justice. You know, I mean, that is a concern. This is the United States of America. This is not a banana republic. But some of these protests seem so violent. It's quite troubling.
Well, yes. And these are people of violence. They've shown themselves to be people of violence on a spectrum of issues. And that really is a test, not so much of the issue itself, but of our law enforcement and our willingness to use it. And this, of course, has been a terrible weakness of the Democrats who are now in power. I think a lot will start to change once we have these midterm elections.
Okay, the Dobbs decision says Roe was egregiously wrong from the start. Its reasoning was exceptionally weak, and the decision has had damaging consequences. Your comment on their quote.
Well, yes. For example, the weakness of their reasoning, the Roe v. Wade decision reads like a piece of legislation, and they say, well, the state cannot interfere with the right to abortion in the first trimester, but in the second trimester, it can take actions for the women's health. And in the third trimester, it can have a compelling interest in the life of the baby. Well, There's no, it gives no constitutional rationale for drawing those lines. That kind of line drawing is legislative. If you look in Roe v. Wade and even later in Planned Parenthood versus Casey, for the constitutional rationale, you don't find it. You know, why is it a compelling interest to protect the baby in the third trimester, but not in the second? They don't answer that question. Very weak reasoning on history, very weak reasoning on science. They quoted from, you know, a pro-abortion attorney and a freelance journalist to get their science and history lessons down. And Roe, for example, talked about the views of the unborn in among ancient philosophers, but made no reference to what was happening in the 19th century when the 14th Amendment was being ratified, where most of the states outlawed abortion throughout pregnancy. They make no reference to that history, but they make reference to history, ancient history, which has no constitutional relevance. The damage that it's done, obviously, to the babies that have been killed, 63.5 million, to the moms, the dads, the families, we know all that damage. But the court refers also to the damage done to our understanding of the role of the court itself. All this focus on, you know, this behavior that you mentioned already from the other side, you know, why are they threatening justices? Well, they have because they've been trained wrongly so that all the power to decide abortion policy resides in these nine justices. And this is part of the damage that's been inflicted. It's like, no, it doesn't reside in the justices. It resides in the American citizens. So, and many other forms of damage can be outlined and are outlined in the decision. But yes, they summarize that very well. And these are points, the weakness of the reasoning, the damage that has been inflicted, are things I want to urge people to study by reading the decision itself and really pondering what it says.
You know, it's so interesting, though, to see this reaction on the part of the left. I mean, I remember reading somebody said that nobody should ever allow Samuel Alito to be in public and not go up and harass him ever again. And nobody should let John Roberts, you know, walk down the street or whatever without harassing him, you know, that kind of thing. And it's like, wow, signing up to become a Supreme Court justice, if you just want to uphold the Constitution, that could be, you know, hazardous as an occupation, I guess.
Yeah. And this is something that shows the kind of division that exists over these issues. But praise God how these justices have just, you know, remained courageous, not changed course. And it's got to become a lesson in, you know, what is the judiciary? It has no force. It doesn't have an army. It doesn't have a bank account. It's not an institution that changes things like the other two branches. It merely has judgment. This is why the justices' robes are black. They're not there to bring their opinion, whether it's left or right or center, in any way, shape, or form. So these people are really disrespecting not just the justices, but the whole process that our founders envisioned. To their credit, they say in the Dobbs decision, you know, we don't know how the public is going to react. But the phrase that Justice Alito uses in the opinion is, we don't have the authority to change our decisions based on public pressure or public opinion. We don't have the authority. That's an interesting way of putting it, because they are given a constitutional duty to judge, and only to judge, and to judge based on the Constitution. You know, as our culture changes, these extreme reactions will subside as the culture changes, and the change in the culture is going to be now accelerated by, we're going to see in the coming days an avalanche of pro-life laws coming into effect, you know, because of the trigger laws in many states, because of new pro-life laws that will be put in place, and because of pro-life laws that are under injunction right now in lower courts, but because of Dobbs, those injunctions will be lifted and those laws will go into effect. And the more the law changes, the more people begin to realize, you know, maybe this policy has some basis to it.
Okay, so basically in the United States of America, where is abortion legal post the Dobbs decision?
Well, we have certain states that have already put laws that allow abortion right up until birth. And some of these are recent laws, New Jersey, Colorado, of course, New York, California, and various other states. Some have put it in their constitutions that there is a right to abortion, and some are trying to put it into their constitutions. There's two battles that people should be aware of going on right now in that realm are Michigan and Kansas. There have been battles there now for a little while about their state constitutions. And then, you know, there are more on both sides. It basically boils down to roughly a 20-20-10 split among the 50 states. In other words, around 20 that have pro-abortion policies solidly established, another 20 that have pretty good pro-life policies, and then the other 10 we can build. We have the environment in those states to build good pro-life legislation. But any of this can change at any time, and that's something I want to invite people to really embrace, this idea that even a place like California, like New York, because of the Dobbs case, those in the legislature or in the governor's office even who are pushing for abortion can no longer hide behind the justices. They can no longer simply declare, oh, well, abortion is a constitutional right. No, now what they have to do is make their case. They have got to be able to persuade the people, the voters, the lawmakers, that dismembering a baby, decapitating a child in the womb is somehow a good thing. And if they can't make that case, they no longer have the fallback of, oh, but well, whether I can make the case or not, it's a constitutional right. No, it's not. And that's the main force of what Dobbs has now given us.
Okay, we have about 2 minutes left. Is every abortion a violent act, at least against the unborn baby?
Oh, it certainly is, because it wouldn't be an abortion by definition unless it intentionally ended the life of a developing human being. It's always harmful to the mother, too, not just sometimes. I mean, the extent to which she will be aware of the harm, the timing of that awareness, and the degree of the harm will vary. But there's no such thing as aborting a child without harming that mother, too. And we know that, of course, because at Priests for Life, we have the Rachel's Vineyard and Silent No More, the largest healing ministries after abortion.
A comment on chemical abortions. That seems to be coming a rising fad or, you know, a rising trend, especially in the wake of, you know, the maybe some of the surgical abortions declining in numbers.
Yeah, the percentage of these chemical abortion methods has been increasing, and it's really an effort by the other side to overcome the difficulty they've had finding doctors to do abortions. But there will always be surgical abortions for some of the reasons actually that the court has identified and that the other side has identified, namely that many women are in denial or they are ambivalent by the time they realize that they want to have an abortion. The pregnancy is well advanced, or sometimes circumstances change later in the pregnancy. Maybe they lose the support of the father of the baby or whatever other change happens. So there will always be the surgical procedures, but the chemical ones are increasing. But there's a lot of things we can do legislatively and culturally to prevent those as well.
And I just want to close on this note, and that is the founders of America said in our Declaration of Independence, this is our national birth certificate, if you will, that our rights come from the Creator, and the first listed is the right to life. So thank you, Father Pavone, for fighting for this right for life. PriestsForLife.org for more information. How about a 10-second closing thought?
Okay, well, thanks to all those who have labored for so long in this great cause. God has been faithful, has answered our prayers, and let's continue building a culture of life.
Father Frank Pavone, priestsforlife.org. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Bye-bye.